Holy Church? Where is our Holy Church where race and class unite as equal persons in the search for beauty, truth, and right? As much as we talk in the United States about how everyone is equal, equality is a rather elusive goal. Even among religious institutions, Sunday morning is among the most segregated of all times and places, it is often said. Even among Unitarian Universalists. One of the ways in which we are segregated is by social class. Sometimes, as Reverend Alicia Ford says, it feels like we are eyeing one another across a great divide. Unitarian Universalism is often characterized and stereotyped as not only a middle-class religion, but an upper-middle-class one. It is often said that members score high on a combination of four scales that measure class. Those four scales are income, wealth, educational level, and job prestige. And a person's place on the scale combines to provide access to social power, or social capital, as we call it sometimes. And there is some truth to this characterization of Unitarian Universalism. But like other stereotypes, this one leads to some damaging assumptions. These implicit and explicit assumptions about social class in our Unitarian Universalist congregations keep us separate, and they erect barriers to our actual ability to get to know one another and to be more united in that search for beauty, truth, and right. Assumptions about who is a Unitarian Universalist and who isn't a Unitarian Universalist creates a divide, and it fosters feelings of insufficiency and deficiency and even guilt in ourselves and each other. These assumptions can actually render invisible the many differences and gifts of class among us and in our midst. The assumptions and the expectations that Unitarian Universalists too often bring to social class suggest to us what is valued as normative and what holds a higher value to us. Too often the attitude is that everyone is aspiring to be middle class or wealthy, or already is, or that we all want to have a college education, or whatever we consider the attributes of being middle class or upper middle class. I think so often of a beloved elder in this community who is no longer with us, who shared with me that they did not have a college education. They told me, "I know I'm the only one." They were not the only one. But why was it that an elder in our community who had been a member of this church for many years, many, many years, still thought, "I'm the only one here who doesn't have a college education"? Why should that be? This kind of assumptions that we make about ourselves and each other minimize and devalue the presence of those who we assume are not here. It masks the important contributions that everyone makes. It often masks the reality that there are people who are working class and people who are poor in our movement and in our congregation. There are people who are hourly wage earners, There are people who are under or unemployed. There are people who are living on disability. There are people without a college education. There are people who are experiencing financial instability. Most of the time, we just don't talk about it. Why should that be? Why don't we talk about it? Well, it's considered embarrassing and awkward to talk about it. Talking about social class in our congregations and in this church tends to make people feel uncomfortable. Maybe you're uncomfortable right now thinking about all of this. And there's discomfort all around, on both sides, on all sides. And I think there can be a real lack of awareness. A person's own background and own class can be so internalized, so much the way things are, that it's invisible to us. It's hard to even talk about or acknowledge when we don't even realize that it isn't just the way it is. Pierre Bourdieu, a French sociologist and philosopher, has had a tremendous influence on social theory. And his concept of habitus has provided great insight into social class. According to Bourdieu, we have deeply ingrained habits, skills, and dispositions that are based on our life experiences, based on the way we were raised, and notably based on social class. In particular, the social class that we were raised in, often. So habitus is the water we swim in. The experiences we have as children and based on social class can be vastly different among us, and it can lead us, and does lead us, to see the world in different ways. And we don't always recognize that. And we don't always recognize that differently isn't better or worse, or right or wrong. Our social habitus gives us strengths and weaknesses. To see that requires that we have an intentional process of discovery, of self-discovery and other discovery. So the challenge for us is to begin to see the waters that we're swimming in. And I hope that each of us will spend some time reflecting on our own class stories. Randy and Tracy have done that, and I hope that's been a great illustration for all of us about what it means to do that reflection on our own social class and to begin to think about how to share our class stories with one another. This morning, I want to take just a few minutes to share a little bit of my class story. Parts of it you've heard before, some of you who've been around. Some you may not have heard before. My mother was college educated, but she spent most of her working life as a high school secretary. She was the lowest paid administrative person at the school, which was my high school. I knew this, and so did everyone else in our small town. And the reason that everyone knew is that because every year they published the administrative salaries in the local newspaper. This both angered and embarrassed my father in particular. Now, in addition to my mother's full-time job, she also did sewing for other people, mostly women, and she did this on the side for extra income. She loved to sew, but she did this to make what she called pin money. The women that came to our house for seamstress help were not only able to afford clothing that my mother and the rest of my family could never afford. But they could also afford to pay someone else to have their clothing customized to fit them. My father had a high school education and he took some business classes. He was disappointed that he was not able to go to college. As a young man, he worked in a variety of hourly jobs. He worked at a bakery. He took photographs for the local newspaper. He worked in a factory at one time in his life. He was also a boxer when he was young. He worked at the Hershey Boys Home as a house parent. But for most of my life, he was self-employed. And he decided he wanted to be self-employed because working for other people squashed his spirit and made him often feel demeaned. He was a proud man. He'd worked hard. His business was installing storm windows and storm doors for people. He ran most of his business, the paperwork part, from the house, but the other part of the business from the unheated barn on our property. And of course, there was a space heater when it was really cold to help him out there with his work. As a family, we did not socialize except with our extended family. We went to church regularly, except when my father refused. He didn't always like to go to church. My parents did not drink. They did not dance. We didn't take family vacations. It wasn't part of our culture, and we couldn't afford it. We had family meals together, and we played a lot of board games, especially Monopoly and Parcheesi. My father almost always won. He was very competitive. My parents were Democrats in a predominantly Republican town, so we didn't talk about politics in public, only in private. My parents were great readers, and they instilled in me a love of reading and a thirst for education. So now I have 4 degrees beyond high school, a bachelor's, 2 masters, and a doctor of ministry. It was my education and then my professional life that really stirred up those waters that I was swimming in. The first time I flew in an airplane was in my mid-20s as part of a job. I was terrified, by the way. It was not second nature to me to be on an airplane. The first time I went to the symphony was in my late 30s when my boss and his wife took me with them. It was around the same period in my life that I saw my first Broadway show, Les Miserables, and that one I organized for myself. Since then, I've traveled abroad and experienced music and arts and cultural events. I love those experiences. Because of the way that I was raised, I place a high value on day-to-day living and on being able to have unstructured and extended time at home. Time is very precious to me. I appreciate solitude and I enjoy having meals at home. I enjoy playing board games. Lately, that's cribbage. I learned growing up about the value of deferred gratification and economizing. There's no way I would have gotten all those 4 degrees had I not learned those skills. Having a fancy car or a big house is unimportant to me. Books and education are a priority. Having a savings account means financial security to me. I learned that as a child. Didn't matter exactly how much was in that account, but having a savings account was of the utmost importance. I also credit my upbringing with providing me with a high level of resiliency in my life. Now I recognize and have had to do some work in, as I said, seeing that water I swim in, and recognizing that my social class today is middle class, but my habitus does not neatly correspond to that of many of my middle class peers, either professionally or personally. And so in social settings, I often feel like a fish out of water. I can feel awkward or sometimes like a bit of a fraud. I think this happens to people when their growing up years and that habitus does not necessarily correspond to where they find themselves later on in life. I don't intuitively know middle class norms and rules. They aren't part of the water I swim in. So I ask you all, do you have an awareness of the water that you are swimming in? Cultivating that awareness is foundational to our own development, to our own self-knowledge. And I hope that each of you will spend some time reflecting on your own class story, the story of how you grew up and the story of where you are now. I hope that you will also begin to share your story. I hope you'll begin to learn to listen to the stories of others and to appreciate those stories. Sharing our class stories helps us to break down our divides and helps us to further the bonds that unite us as a community. As part of our ongoing practice of getting to know each other beneath the surface, I encourage us all to learn to know ourselves and each other in new ways. So rather than welcoming the coats that we wear, how can we welcome each other for the fullness of who we are, for who we are as people? Another way to think about this is, rather than asking each other the question that people so often ask each other, whether it's at a party or elsewhere, even here at church, rather than asking, what do you do for a living? A more spacious question that is freer of assumptions, freer of judgments. Because of course, as soon as you ask someone what they do for a living, you've already made the first assumption, right? You've already assumed that they're employed. You've already assumed that there's something about what someone does for a living that is going to tell you who they are or something you may need to know or want to know about them. You also assume it's something someone else wants to share and feels comfortable sharing. So what is a more spacious question we might ask others? What do you like to do? What do you like to do with your time? Doesn't that feel really different to be asked, what do you like to do with your time? Sometimes I ask people, maybe you're one of them, I'll ask people on a Sunday morning, a coffee hour, I'll say, so what are you heading off to do for the rest of your day? And it's fascinating what I find out. It might be, I'm going to take a nap, right? Or I'm going off to the park, or I'm going to the movies, or some people say I'm going to work, or they're all different things that people will say. Some will say, I don't know. Haven't figured that out yet. But it is a spacious question to ask people who they are. What do you like to do? What are you interested in? And how did you discover your love for that activity? Just imagine for a moment what we might learn about each other and what we might learn about ourselves. I invite you, I encourage you to learn your own class story and to learn to listen more deeply to the stories of others and to make space for it. May it be so. Amen.
Thank you for joining us this week. If you'd like a copy of the transcript of this sermon, you can find most week's messages at www.uuberks.org/sermons. If you have any thoughts or conversation about today's message, we hope you'll take a moment to stop by our Facebook page and share them. And from all of us at First UU Berks, may this chalice light your path and guide your way until you join us again.